She held a large, ornate fan with gold calligraphy that she kept snapping open and closed every few seconds. Beside her was a round-faced girl wearing a simple peach robe over a gray tunic. Her dark hair was plaited into two braids, the ends of which traveled past her hips. She was remarkably pretty, and looked curiously first at me and then at Fox. But the older woman ignored us, addressing the Asha instead.
"And what is a man doing inside our Asha car?"
She had a high, penetrating voice that yowled out words rather than spoke them. "It can't be helped, Mother. He comes with her." The old woman refused to look at me.
"Highly improper. Highly improper. There are no rooms available for men here, whether they be wretched familiars or not. You know that, Michaela."
"The Owajin boarding house is only a block away from the district, Mother. I can talk to the mistress there and set up lodgings for him."
"Do that, but do not arrange for anything more permanent. These wretchlings of yours come and fail so often that it would cost us more in the long run. Have you brought her to the Oracle?"
"Not yet, Mother."
"I don't see why you bring these waifs here without consulting the Oracle. If they do not pass the test, then they are not welcomed here."
"This one is different."
"Ha! Huh. You thought the same of those other wretchlings. What do you consider different matters little to me. Your unkempt charge might burn herself out soon enough, and then we would have to shoulder that expense on top of everything. Take her to the Oracle, and then we shall see."
She snapped her folding fan closed one last time.
"Come, Shoddy."
The girl in the peach robe shot us an apologetic look, but obeyed.
"That's your mother?" I whispered to the Asha, aghast, as soon as the two had left the room.
Lady Michaela chuckled. "I call her Mother, but we aren't related by blood. This is the House Valerian, my Ashaka, and she is Mistress Parmina, who runs it."
I was even more horrified. One of the books my father had bought for me dealt with the exploits of contemporary Asha, and one of the warrior maidens it told about was a woman named Parmina of the Fires. She had once served as the personal bodyguard to King Farnad, who also happened to be King Telamane's father and Prince Khonsa's grandfather. The book talked in glorious detail of the many instances she had saved him from an assassin's blade before leaving to head her own Asha Ka. Surely this could not be the same Parmina. The tale I remember did not match that pinched face and that thin, reedy voice.
"She is one and the same. Do not let her appearance deceive you. She is still a powerful Asha in her own right, and she is also one of Kion's best minds. She's a bit waspish now, because it is morning and she hates to have her sleep interrupted. Let us bring you to the Oracle and prove her wrong."
"What did she mean about passing a test?" I asked once we were back out in the street. Instead of leaving the district, Lady Michaela led us even deeper into its center. People stopped to bow low to Lady Michaela before hurrying on. Some shot Fox and I inquisitive looks but did not linger to ask questions.
"It is a requirement for Asha novices to be brought to the Oracle but not to pass her test. Many who have failed the first time have gone on to become skilled spellbinders. Apprentices must pass only their second tests, when they make their debut. Faceless insurgents have always been a problem, and the first test is simply our way of weeding them out."
"But if they do not pass..."
"For different reasons, and not because they are spies. Mother, unfortunately, is highly superstitious. If the Oracle does not approve of a girl at their first meeting, Mother will not accept her into the Valerian. I believe it has something to do with what the Oracle herself told Mother when she was an apprentice."
I didn't know what to say. A part of me balked at having traveled so far only to be turned away.
But another part rejoiced at the possibility that they would return me to my family if I failed. There are many other Ashika who are willing to take in those who Mother rejects, Lady Michaela said, dispelling that last hope. But do not worry yourself over it. I am certain you will succeed.
But why would she even consider letting bone witches into her Ashika? Aren't we bad luck?
In Kion, we call ourselves Dark Asha. Bone Witch is offensive here just as much as it is in Odalia. But all Asha take offense at the term. And Dark Asha are not necessarily a prerequisite to fail the Oracle's test, little one. Mistress Simon, who was head of the Valerian before she died and Mother took over, was also a Dark Asha. She smiled kindly at me. Do not let the prejudices of a few people affect your place in the greater scheme of Kion. In the Willows, all Asha are equally respected. The Oracle lived in a small shrine at the very center of town. It was small compared to the other Ashika around it, but looked more impressive. It had a double-domed roof, and I could see colorless smoke rising out of its top, like wayward clouds drifting back into the sky. A pillar of thin columns stretched across the entrance before large doors built of polished wood. I cannot join you inside, Lady Michaela said quietly. It is forbidden for more than one Asha to enter at the same time. So Fox and I will wait here until you return.
But what do I do?
The Oracle will ask you for an item. Take the sapphire pin I had given you for this. Answer her honestly, little one. Asha also means truth, and truth is the only weapon you need. The Oracle sometimes speaks in riddles, but what she says must remain between the two of you. A small bell hung from one side. The Asha rung it 3 times, the sound loud to my ears in the quiet. Now go. She is waiting. The entranceway led to a narrow passage, not unlike the one we had entered the Valerian by, lit only by small torches on the walls. The path seemed to go on forever, and it constantly curved to the right like a snake winding around itself, leading into a large room devoid of furniture or decoration. The first thing I saw when I stepped into the main chamber were the fires. They rose up from a large brazier at the center. But rather than breathe in soot and ash, I found myself taking in the smell of sandalwood. A small figure dressed in white was seated before it, and the train of her dress spread out around her like a pristine fan. A veil was drawn across her face, so I was unable to see her features. But when she lifted an arm, I saw her hand, smooth and unwrinkled.
What is your sacrifice?
Her voice was like a mournful chorus that spoke as one, and it echoed across the bare room. I fumbled at my hair and pulled at the pin I wore, the one made from star sapphires.
Throw it into the fire.
I hesitated, shocked. Surely Lady Michaela didn't mean to give me something so valuable only to be wasted in this manner. My hand wavered between the expensive blue gems and the less costly amethyst with its odd crescent. The veiled woman made a swift, impatient gesture.
Throw it into the fire, child.
It hurt to see those sapphires lost to the flames. The Oracle remained unmoved, staring hard at the center of the fire, so close that I feared sparks would fall on her veil and clothes and burn her.
Do you truly wish to return home, child?
A yes hovered at my lips, but I hesitated. Lady Michaela had told me to answer the Oracle's question honestly. All throughout the journey, I had convinced myself that there was nothing I wanted more than to go back home to Knight's Cross. But then I recalled the hostility of the villagers, people I had long considered to be friends. In truth, I had thought much like them, But now that I was on the other side of that hate, I refused to go back to that way of thinking. If I did return, I knew they would still treat me differently. Even if I never drew the dark for the rest of my life. And then there was another reason. The woman waited. Countless Asha must have entered her sanctum, must have wrestled with the same choice as I did. No. The word came out small and disbelieving. I do not wish to return home.
Why?
I swallowed. Because I like how the power to wield the magic feels. The flames seemed to blaze brighter, as if the fire had heard my answer and approved.
You will change, Ankyo. For the good, and also for the bad. You will change, Kion. You will change the Eight Kingdoms. Return to me once you have entered a mind from where three heads sprout.
And the woman turned away. As I left the room, I saw her reach toward the fire. I saw the flames curling toward her outstretched hand, like a child would to his mother or a man would to his wife. And then a heavy gust swept through the room, dousing the fires in one swift motion, plunging the room into darkness. I looked over to where the white figure had stood, but she had disappeared with the wind. I was alone. Congratulations, Tia. Lady Michaela was smiling as I stepped out of the temple. I knew you could do it. How did you...
The smoke changed,
Fox said quietly. I turned to look, and saw it rising out from the covered dome a light blue color, no longer the colorless wisps I'd seen when I entered. We had attracted a small crowd while I was inside, and people were already coming forward, proffering Lady Michaela their congratulations. The dark Asha's face beamed. Fox's looked less enthusiastic. Out of the corner of my eye, I caught someone staring at me. He was swathed in black from head to toe, the way Drichta women preferred their dress. The eyes were veiled, but I had the impression that they were staring straight at me. And it wasn't friendly. I blinked, and the apparition was gone from view. Tia,
is something wrong?
It's nothing. It's nothing, I echoed, and turned away.
This is an ever-flowing, and this is a tamarisk. She touched first one flower, and then another. This one is colchicum, amaryllis, burdock. The language of flowers might seem a frivolous concept to most who live outside of our little part of Ankyo, but it's an important part of our lives. We Asha are always expected to be on our most proper behavior, to never have so much as a hair out of turn. Asha do not cry or scream or make threats. When people cut us, we are expected to do only two things, smile and bleed. She busied herself with the bouquet arrangement on the table, taking out a flower at one end, adding a few more in other places. Her finger grazed against the petal of a large pink blossom. Our houses are named after flowers for a reason. My house, Valerian, means of an accommodating nature. Other Ashika hold similar meanings. Hawkweed is for quick-sightedness. Kala means magnificent beauty. It was only after I learned the language of flowers that I learned how inappropriately my sisters were named. Lilac means the first stirrings of love, and yet my sister Lilac was a spinster, more comfortable in her own company than in others. Marigold was a happy, bouncy girl, though her name meant despair. Rose meant beauty, but she was the homeliest of us sisters. And as for Daisy, the long, slim fingers stilled momentarily against the green leaves. There are many different kinds of daisies. A garden daisy means I share in your sentiment. A wild daisy means I make no promises. A Michaelmas daisy is to be an afterthought, and the common daisy means innocence. But Daisy died only a few years after I arrived at Keon. Her hands moved again, pale against the vibrant flowers. In this regard, she said softly, I'd like to believe she was quite common.
7.
Listen here, girl. I don't need to know your name. I don't want to know your name. So many girls flutter in and out of this house, running away and getting married and dying and leaving us in the red. You will begin work here as one of our maids. If you last long enough to begin your formal lessons, then I will finance your training to be an Asha. Until then, you will work at the scullery and clean the rooms and do everything I say if you know what's good for you.
This was how Mistress Parmina welcomed me into House Valerian. This was how she welcomed every Asha they took in. But I felt that the old woman was more abrupt with me than she might have been with the others. Lady Michaela had brought half a dozen other girls to Keon before she found me. The old woman refused to accept any of them, certain they would fail their test with the Oracle, and was smug when proven right. That I was the exception annoyed her. It took me several days to get used to the Valerian, and I was amazed at how big it truly was. The Ashika were three houses joined together by a strip of corridor, with only the main house visible from the outside. The largest room was where Mistress Parmina received visitors, and the smaller rooms along the back were used for sleeping. Mistress Parmina had her own room, and Lady Michaela and Lady Shadi had theirs as well, despite the long periods of time my mentor spent outside of Keon. A separate path led to the dining area and the scullery, where I and the two maids the Ashika employed slept. Lady Michaela also gave me permission to make use of her library whenever she was away, and what little personal time I had was spent reading my way through her impressive collection of books, returning frequently for second and third and 17th helpings. The next was a guest house where visitors could spend the night, and that was composed of one large room with multiple screen partitions that could be added to or removed according to the resident's fancy. The smallest was a bathhouse made of wood. I learned much later that the water piped into the baths did so through a series of underground springs that traveled through the heart of the willows and that supplied many of the Ashika in this manner. There was a courtyard garden within the house's walls, which contained a vegetable and herb garden. There was even a tiny pond filled with guppies and a few large turtles. As the newest member of House Valerian, I was given many chores to do. I was one of the first to wake and spent most of my mornings watering the plants and tending to the vegetable garden, sweeping the floors and the street outside of the house, and cleaning the rooms. I was also given the task of cleaning the outhouses, which I hated most of all, though fortunately the maids and I took turns. Their names were Kana and Farhi, and both were 17 years old. Kana was amiable with a blushing, demure prettiness. Her family came from the small village of Belaryu in southeast Keon, where her grandfather's ancestors had lived since Empress Undra's reign over a century ago. Her father sold pomegranates at the city market, and her mother looked after Kana's siblings, all three younger than she was. She was fond of pretty things and hoped to one day purchase a sivar, like those the Asha wore, from one of the many hairdressing establishments in the willows. Mistress Parmina frowned on the maids wearing anything elaborate, but allowed her a plain hairpin with a tiny faux ruby set on it, which she wore at all times. Farhi came from a different stock altogether. Her family moved to Keon from Adra'al when she was 7 years old, but they continued to cling to their Drichta roots, wearing their traditional dress and veil, though her face was uncovered. To work in the willows had not been her choice, but the job paid well. She looked on the Asha's fancy hua and its ornaments with disapproval, but otherwise kept to herself. Both girls' families lived near Ankyo's market district, and whenever I heard them talk about visiting their parents or buying small toys from nearby shops to bring home to their siblings, I could not help feeling a small pang of homesickness. I would have to travel a longer way to see my family. One other woman worked at the Valerian, named Ula. She served as Mistress Parmina's assistant and made an account of every transaction that went on inside the Ashika, the household expenses, tabs incurred from shops, and all the fees Asha earned from their parties and contracts. She also booked new engagements for them and kept track of all money changing hands, including any gifts and tips patrons may have presented to the Asha. I was surprised to learn that Lady Michaela still went to the parties and dinner gatherings Ula arranged for her. I assumed that she had earned her independence and was free of such petty details. The Asha herself explained to me that while she could take time off if she desired, these social meetings were her means of keeping track of the local politics of the day, and to cement her influence with the powerful nobles who frequented such celebrations. It took me a while to learn more about the rest of the members of our little household, and they were fewer than I imagined. Mistress Parmina ran the Ashika. Lady Michaela was her adopted daughter and also her successor. Lady Shadi was the only apprentice Asha, having arrived 2 years before I did, and was about to make her debut. She was nice, but she was always rushing out to attend lessons. With my chores taking up most of my days, we never had much time to talk. Like Mistress Parmina, she could not draw the dark. While House Valerian was known for taking in dark Asha, it was not a requirement. Lady Shadi was not expected to contribute to the household chores because she was busy enough with attending classes during the day and going out to entertain at night. These parties were the bread and butter of many houses, where nobles and others who could afford it pay Asha to bring life to what might otherwise be boring functions. Apprentices make their debut as young as 14 or 15 years old, and these parties were integral to their development as Asha. While problems did come up, an Asha apprentice had caused a scandal the year before when she ran away with a nobleman's son, most Asha knew better than to jeopardize their chances of a good life. I had always thought Hua were made the same way. Long, trailing sleeves, a waist wrap as thick as one's torso, a tunic-like front to display the detailed underrobe underneath. That wasn't always the case. I saw Asha wearing different variations of this wardrobe to mimic the fashion style popular in the kingdom they were born in, or to put their own personal spin to the design. But Asha policy required that they all wear the traditional hua when attending functions at an official capacity, including entertaining guests within Ankyo. Lady Shadi often departed from the Valerian when I was waiting on Mistress Parmina, so I rarely saw her leave. But I caught a glimpse of her as she was stepping out of the house one evening. She wore a beautiful hua of a deep coral that made an elegant contrast against her dark skin. Blue-green bamboo swayed against the swirling silver cloud patterns on the rich cloth, and she had on a gray waist wrap with embroidered sparrows set in gold. Heads turned to look at her as she made her way leisurely down the street. But Shadi must have been used to those admiring stares, for she never turned her head. There were three other Asha under Mistress Parmina, but they were contracted out to several nobles in other kingdoms at the time. Two of them were serving as bodyguards in the kingdoms of Istera and Arankosho, while one was at the Yodosha city-states. I must confess that despite the books I had about Asha, I knew very little about the workings of the Willows, until Lady Michaela took me aside one day to explain it all to me. The first Ashika to come into existence was the House Imperial. It was founded by the legendary Asha Vernasha of the Roses, also known as one of the five great heroes, who made her home in Ankyo, in the then newly established kingdom of Kion. She was a noblewoman of the Trissian court and taught her novices the arts of dancing, singing, and etiquette. The most skilled of these she sent to work as entertainers at royal assemblies, and by keeping an ear out for court intrigues was able to extend her influence into the other kingdoms. Only a few Asha proved to be skilled at the fighting arts. Of these, she offered the best to kings and nobles to serve as personal bodyguards. Once in these positions of power, they were able to affect kingdom policy, helping to cement a longer-lasting peace among the rulers. She was quite adamant, however, that all who wished to be Asha be strong in the runic magic, a law still enforced today.
"But why must I have to learn how to sing and dance?" I asked her, bewildered. "Isn't being a dark Asha enough?"
It was true that the Asha in many books I'd read were skilled musicians and dancers, but I had not known this was required of them. "Being the most powerful Asha there does not always mean you are the most influential or the most popular," Lady Michaela explained. "In war, Asha influence outcomes with their prowess in fighting, with their skills. But sometimes a beautiful voice can change a kingdom better than a sword ever could. Asha gifted in the arts are highly sought after in royal courts. Quite a few go on to marry royalty. Defeat them in war and beguile them in peacetime. Vernasha believed both to be the way to stability."
She shrugged and added dryly,
"Over the years, however, Ashaka themselves have become quite political, more concerned with bringing prestige to their houses. Nevertheless, most follow the letter of the law that Vernasha has laid down, even if not always in spirit."
Word of the Willows spread, and women not just from Kion but from all over the lands flocked to Ankyo, wanting to be trained. Many did not possess the innate sense of magic Vernasha demanded in order to become Asha, so she gave them other jobs. Banquet masters and tea room owners to cater to an Ashaka and their wealthy guests. Ateliers to create the hua. Hairdressers to fashion the hair ornaments important to an Asha's wardrobe. And instructors to specialize in singing, in dancing, and in other softer arts. The Willows attracted women from all kingdoms. There were dark-haired and dark-eyed Kion Asha, blonde-haired, blue-eyed Asha from Tresea, and gold-skinned, angular-eyed Asha from Denoris. There were even Asha as far away as the Dricht Bluffs, fleeing from that kingdom to avoid persecution and finding refuge in Ankyo. A few still veiled themselves, though many forsook their traditions and embraced the customary Kion Hua. The thorn of my life was Mistress Parmina. The old woman frequently sent me out with a list of errands for special items. Her medicines, or the red bean cakes she was fond of, or a 2 dozen heavy hua to be laundered all at once. And punished me with double duty at the outhouses if I did not return within the hour. Because I had trouble finding my way around the city, and because she wouldn't allow any of the other maids to accompany me, I was almost always saddled with these unwanted duties upon my return. The old woman loved to bathe, and insisted that I attend to her in the bathhouses in place of either Kana or Farhi. I spent many a night crouched on the cold earthen floor, my knees numb and my hands gnarled from the moisture in the air, washing and soaping the old woman's back. Perhaps the most terrifying aspect of this for me was the mistress's naked body. It was hard for me to imagine her as having been a beautiful Asha in her youth like Lady Michaela claimed, because while she was as thin as a broomstick, her skin sagged and folded in the worst of ways, like yards of ungainly, sickly yellow cloth that moved and breathed when she did. She belched and passed gas whenever she felt like it, which was often. She demanded that I massage her feet every day, which were caked in old sores and pockmarks. I was commanded to prepare many of her favorite dishes, only for her to claim she had ordered no such thing when brought before her, and then demand that the cost of these meals be deducted from the Valerian's investment of me. Because she was the head, everyone obeyed her.
no matter how ridiculous or irrational her orders were. I felt that Mistress Parmina acted like an overindulgent brat, as if her advanced age had regressed her to a spoiled child. Once, she ordered me to sit down on a chair propped up in one corner of the room. I obeyed, only to leap to my feet with a loud shriek that sent Lady Shadi and Kana running into the room. Mistress Parmina, on the other hand, was cackling. Half hidden underneath the cushions was a small cactus. I was not ashamed that I spent many a night coming up with different ways to kill that woman. You would think that Lady Michaela would rush to my defense, but she was strangely silent on the matter, content to look the other way every time the old woman would abuse her authority. Lady Shadi was kind, but did the same. Kana and Farhi were powerless to do anything. The former was sympathetic, and since the latter looked at magic as a kind of sin, the mistress's actions were redundant. I felt like I had no one looking out for me at the Valerian. And I even began to resent Lady Michaela for it. Fox remained the one bright spot of my days. He would stand patiently in front of the Valerian for hours, if only to let me know he was close by. Sometimes he would explore the city, preferring this over staying at the lodgings Lady Michaela had arranged for him. Whenever I was sent on another one of Mistress Parmina's errands, he would accompany me without anyone else knowing. He learned the lay of the city quicker than I had, taking time to roam the streets and commit many of the shop's locations to memory, so that we were never lost on our way to the same shop twice. After my initial frustration over the old Asha's demands had faded, I realized I actually began looking forward to each trip. It was the only time I could spend with Fox. "Are you mad at me?" I asked after one such errand to the sweet shop to pick up sugar cake. Sometimes when the list of things to do was overwhelming, Fox and I would divide up the tasks so we could return to the Ashaka with more than enough time to spare. Mistress Parmina had taken to falling asleep while she waited, and I knew from experience that to wake her was tantamount to suicide. I loitered outside the house with my brother instead, watching passers-by. At this time of the afternoon, there were always people around, and I learned to distinguish between the maids doing errands for their own houses and the apprentice Asha that bustled back and forth between lessons.
"Why would I be angry, Tia?"
Fox sounded genuinely puzzled. "Because I was afraid of you for a little bit." His death had always felt like a barrier between us, like it prevented the closeness we had once shared.
"I think that, given our situation, that's rather understandable, don't you think?"
"Not if this was all my fault to start with."
"I don't want you saying that ever again."
Fox was firm.
"You are not to blame here. And if you're staying in Keon solely for my sake..."
"No!" I said it more forcefully than I wanted to, and he looked startled. "No, I don't want to leave Ankyo. I want to do this. I really do." Fox eyed the entrance leading into the Valerian.
"Even with the old prune inside?"
"Fox!"
"Isn't she? She looks like an old fruit left to dry out in the sun for so long that it grew hungry and tired eating its own face."
"Fox!" I was giggling. A novice hurrying past paused long enough to shoot us dirty looks, and I reeled in my laughter. "It's you I'm worried about, Fox. It must be so tiresome for you, having to follow me around."
"I don't mind. I haven't been as idle as you think. If you want to stay, then I'll stay with you for as long as you want. And I'm sorry for making you afraid. This is new to me, too."
"Are you trying to apologize for my apology?" I demanded. It was Fox's turn to laugh, and it was infectious. We stood there giggling until Mistress Parmina stuck her head out a window and yelled down at us to shut up.
"You must think me too fastidious, listing an Asha's Hua in such detail every time I talk about one, she said. Some people assume that Asha care only about their appearances, when that is the furthest thing from the truth. A Hua collection is as personal and as private as toiletries or underclothes, and as distinctive as a face or a voice. We can identify a particular Asha simply by looking at her dress, for no one would think of wearing the same Hua. To put on someone else's would be an invasion of her privacy, like stealing into her house or secretly assuming her identity. Lady Michaela was born near the Swift Sea, and so she wears water motifs on her Hua to remind her of home. Lady Shadi is fond of peach and coral, and her father raised birds for a living, hence her preference for doves and the like. Mistress Parmina wears fortune runes on hers for luck. And as for me... The cauldron before us belched foul smoke. I stood downwind, but it did little to ease the fumes. She stoked the flames underneath it, and added more wood to encourage the fires. She ran a hand down her own dress, fingers stroking at the head of the dragon embroidered on her waist, like it was a favorite pet. Its body was still concealed underneath her waist wrap, but I fancied I could see the head of another dragon there. She dipped a wooden ladle into the black concoction and spooned out the topaz-colored bezoar. When she spoke again, her voice sounded far away. And that is why what I did was such a violation of Lady Shadi's trust.
8. Over a year after I first arrived at the Valerian in Ankyo, nothing about my situation had changed, save that Lady Michaela's visits to the Ashika decreased over time, Mistress Parmina's petty indignities increased, and I was nearly 14. I was still an indentured servant, and the old woman made it clear I was to be that for some time. Lady Michaela stayed only infrequently at the house, constantly rushing off to different parts of the kingdom. I suspected she was struggling with something important, but she never made mention of her troubles. I was at the time of my life where I felt both overworked and foolish, and I was too caught up in my own misery to inquire further. The first inkling I had of her situation was a conversation I overheard by accident between her and Mistress Parmina. I was scrubbing furiously at the floors beside the old woman's room because she was fond of smoking shisha wherever she went. The soot and ashes left in her wake clung stubbornly to the ground, and it took several spongings for the black stains to disappear. Sakmeet died last week, Lady Michaela said. She had been ill for a number of months and could not attend to her duties. I had to put down the Zirik in her stead. The Death Seekers still hunt for the Savul.
Losing Sakmeet is a heavy blow,
Mistress Parmina agreed.
The Dark Asha's numbers dwindle daily with little to replenish them. There is only you and the girl left. You are not strong enough to keep up this charade, and I do not like that you have very little time in between to heal.
I will be strong enough, Mother.
I would much rather you be weak and safe than strong and dead. There are reports that the people of the Lai breed in Kion, and so we must be ever watchful. The King of Estera has sent me word. He has rooted out a sect of faceless in his kingdom. But their leader, Aina, is missing. His spies tell him that she may be in Ankyo.
And what of the other two faceless leaders?
Druge is rumored to be stirring up trouble in the Yadosha city-states. For the moment, he is their problem. Usij has declared war on Denoris but remains holed up somewhere in their mountains, prepared to defend his stronghold there. I am thankful that none of them harbor much affection for the other. It would be much more difficult to stave them off should they pose a united front. Are you sure about the wretchling?
I have faith in her abilities, Mother.
I dearly hope so, Darayem. I have found her of little use so far. Slovenly with the housework. Slow to learn. But quite skilled at eavesdropping in matters that do not concern her.
The old woman raised her voice.
I expect the outhouses to be clean by the end of the day, Tia. You'd best start immediately if you expect any dinner tonight.
I scrambled away as fast as I could, lugging my water bucket behind me. At the very least, I thought sourly, she had learned my name. Why can't you just resurrect her? I asked Lady Michaela sometime afterward. Wouldn't it solve the problem? But the woman shook her head. You forget, Tia, that Dark Asha cannot raise those who share the same Silver Heart's glass as theirs. Whatever the advantages our abilities give, we cannot enjoy them in death. That doesn't seem fair. Neither is life, girl. Already, I was restless. There seemed to be no end in sight as far as my servitude was concerned, and Lady Michaela's library, extensive as it was, had no books about Asha and runic magic. Where was the training I was promised, the lessons I would learn to become Asha? Sweeping floors and washing dishes may have taught me patience and determination, but unless I could defeat a deva armed with a mop and bucket, Mistress Parmina was no more teaching me lessons than taking advantage of a free servant. I wreaked my revenge in 100 different, albeit petty, ways. Whenever I was sent to buy a box of sweetmeats for Mistress Parmina, I took a piece for myself, and she never knew. On days when she was being particularly nasty, I would wipe the privy with her face cloth. I realize, looking back, how immature I was being. But it was the closest thing I had to rebellion at a time when I felt powerless. Whenever I was at my lowest, I would pretend that I had a better future. I pictured myself as a powerful Asha, slaying Deva and slowly earning the people's admiration. I imagined I was as Lilac had predicted, with jewels and gowns and a prince by my side, who resembled Prince Khans more and more with each passing day. From there my thoughts often drifted, and I wondered if I would see him again, or if he would even remember me. Any good days I had were because I had spent them with Fox. He smuggled me small gifts when no one else was looking. Hair ribbons and new clothes Mistress Parmina was quick to notice, and they would have found their way into garbage bins. I was only allowed Lady Michaela's crescent pin to wear in my hair. The amethyst ornament I would have rather consigned to the Oracle's flames instead of my blue sapphires. Instead, Fox gave me things I could hide more easily. An occasional book he'd bought at the marketplace, or some of my favorite snacks, like sweet, sticky mochi pastries, meat cutlets, and fried bread, to make up for the thin, watery soup, pickled radishes, rice, and runeberry fruit I was fed. Offset only by grilled sardines twice a week. At my suggestion, he gave these to Kana and Farhi as well. Kana received these cants, as she called them, probably because these were things she wasn't allowed to have as a servant in the Ashika, with unfettered joy. Farhi was a little less welcoming, but the bland meals we were given soon wore down her resolve, though she would only accept the gifts if they came from my hand rather than from my brother's. I had more chores than either girl, but soon both began pitching in when they could. Kana because she was grateful, and Farhi because she did not want to feel beholden to me. Often they gave me early warning when Mistress Parmina woke, and we hid in the kitchens before she could find any one of us to scold. Kana giggled and cast shy, admiring glances at Fox when he visited, and I hadn't the heart to tell her he was already dead. Drichta custom dictated that Farhi couldn't associate with men who were not family, and so she kept a respectful, if aloof, distance whenever he was around. I didn't know how Fox found the money to buy me food and books, but every time I badgered him about it, he refused to answer. He showed up one day with a slight limp, and my suspicions grew.
You're going to be in Asha soon, Tia,
he reminded me.
And that means you're expected to be truthful. So it would be best if you didn't know. I am not involved in anything illegal, if that eases your mind.
If you aren't a part of anything illegal, then why won't you tell me? I demanded. And isn't this hypocritical of you to say that I be truthful when you've been smuggling foodstuffs to me for the better part of 3 months?
Technically, not illegal,
he amended.
And I said you had to be truthful, not starving.
He never did answer my question. One spring evening, when the leaves turned as green as the fresh morning dew, I sat on the small veranda, watching the night sky. Mistress Parmina had just recently added one more chore to my already busy schedule. Kana and Farhi took turns waiting up for Lady Shadi to return to the Ashika after her functions, and the old woman had decreed that I share in this duty. Oftentimes, the Asha in training would return late, arriving only a few hours before dawn broke. We were responsible for letting her in and storing away the things she had brought with her to entertain, like her setar or her tonbak, two musical instruments she was particularly skilled at. Lady Shadi was still an apprentice, but she went to many functions like most regular Asha in preparation for her upcoming debut. She had a sweet, fine-spun disposition, and was a favorite among the guests. Mistress Parmina was very pleased with her progress. The air was crisp and cool, and I must have dozed off for several minutes before I became aware of a knocking at our door. Thinking that Lady Shadi had come home earlier than expected, I stumbled to my feet, drawing back the bolt, securing the door in place and tugging it open. I didn't recognize the pretty girl standing before me, but I did recognize the simple brown robe she wore. Ashika were not the only buildings in the Willows. There were many shops there that catered specifically to them, such as the ateliers, the schools of the arts, and the apothecaries. Ashika were found nearer to the Oracle's temple, while these shops were located closer to the entrances leading into the Willows. Some of them were the chahana, the tea places, small tea houses where Asha entertained their patrons. Women who served in the chahana wore brown robes much like the one the girl wore.
Is this the Valerian? She asked.
That's what the sign on the walls say, I said, grumpy from being woken so suddenly. What is it?
Are you Miss Tia? The one with that brother named Fox?
My drowsiness disappeared. Save for the people living in the Valerian, I hadn't expected anyone else to know my name.
Who told you about me?
I blurted out, forgetting to be polite. I rarely talked to servants from the other houses, for we were often scolded when caught gossiping instead of working. I didn't know what punishment the others were given, but Mistress Parmina's was to withhold my twice-a-week grilled fish, and I was determined not to lose what little flavor I was afforded in my meals, Fox's smuggled treats notwithstanding. Lady Michaela wasn't the kind of person to gossip, but I didn't think Lady Shadi was the type either. Kana was my best guess. The girl only shrugged. She stank of magic and beauty. I guess even chahana assistants had their vanities.
Please bring a change of clothes for Lady Shadi, and her setar. And you'd better get to it, too, or she'll be mad as hops.
The Falling Leaf was one of the more well-known tea houses in the district, and it was not uncommon for some of their staff to call on houses. Asha normally visited 2 or 3 chahana a night, sometimes more if she was popular. Occasionally they would send word to their ashika and ask for a fresh set of hua, or an instrument they could play if their guests wanted a performance. Asha usually select what to wear based on how appropriate the design is for the season, and often laid them out in their rooms before heading out in case a change of clothes was required in the course of the night. I had gone on similar errands in the past, but no one from any of the tea rooms had ever called for me by name before. Because it was springtime, Lady Shadi had left for the night wearing a beautiful olive-green hua, with doves embroidered along her voluminous sleeves, and a waist wrap of deep plum with silver-stitched outlines of chrysanthemums. The hua she had laid out before leaving was golden in color, with white puffs of dandelions billowing out along its edges, paired with a light gray waist wrap with turquoise leaves. Her setar lay across her bed, slightly worn and scuffed from age and constant use. I wrapped both up carefully with delicate paper and followed the girl outside. Like most tea rooms, the falling leaf looks deceptively simple from the outside. One entered it by walking up through a domed doorway, with a large folding screen made of carved wood and embossed in intricate metal designs, preventing anyone from looking in on the festivities within. Past this screen lay a large garden common in every chahana in Ankyo. Fishes swam in small ponds, with trellises serving as shade. A large fountain statue in the likeness of the great hero Anahita stood at the center, water flowing down a jar she was pouring into one of the many streams below. A series of rooms on a raised platform surrounded this garden, separated by wooden dividers and drawing screens, ensuring that anyone who might want to leave the party for a few minutes to wander among the trees and flowers can do so easily and with all the privacy they desired. The girl bade me to wait at the entrance, but was back in less than a minute, gesturing for me to follow. Soft strains of laughter reached our ears as we approached one of the rooms. The girl tapped lightly against the screen, and it was pulled back almost immediately. A moon-faced Asha stared back at us, before turning back and announcing to the party inside, "The Bone Witchling is here!" A long, slim hand shot out and grabbed me by the sleeve, tugging me into the room before the door slammed shut before the startled attendant's face. There were no guests inside, only Asha. They circled me, giggling, and their silver hearts glass glinted in the candlelight. I sat on the floor, confused and suddenly dizzy, still hugging Lady Shadi's clothes and setar to my chest.
"Why, she's smaller than I expected," said the Asha who'd dragged me inside.
She was easily one of the most beautiful girls I had ever seen, with flowing brown hair artfully arranged in complicated coils at the nape of her neck. Strands of multicolored gemstones hung from her hair and dangled on either side of her face, accentuating her light brown skin. Her hua was a buttercup yellow, with blue-tinged butterflies fluttering at her lengthy sleeves.
"I thought dark Asha would be more imposing, like Michaela of the Hollows or like the Pincher."
The rest of the girls collapsed into laughter.
"If Lady Parmina hears you call her that, Zoya, she would have your hide,"
one of them proclaimed. She wore a gray veil covering her head and chest, and a salmon-colored hua of a wisteria design.
"Then let her, Tammy," Zoya retorted. "I'm not afraid of an old crone who spends her days picking her nose more often than she picks hua."
The laughter grew in volume because that was, in fact, one of Mistress Parmina's unfortunate habits.
"Where is Lady Shadi?"
I asked, my voice quavering, trying to quell the pounding on the side of my head.
"If Lady Shadi were here, then that would take the fun out of everything, wouldn't it?"
Zoya's blue eyes were bright with glee.
"But she did happen to mention that your name was Tia. How unusual! Shadi must be feeling so left out, being the only Asha in a sea of darklings."
I turned toward the door, but a couple of Asha blocked my exit.
"You came here to explore the chahana, didn't you? It would be a shame to let you leave so early,"
said another Asha. Her long braids were coiled around her head, and the long pins in her hair made tinkling sounds every time she moved.
"Don't worry, Brigitte. The fun's only beginning. Open the package. Let's see what's inside."
Zoya's fingers danced, and I saw the telltale glow of an unfamiliar rune in the air before the hua I carried was snatched out of my hands, floating toward her. Another flick of her hand, and the sitar followed, one of the other Asha catching it in midair.
Why, look! It's Shadi's! Naughty little servling!
Hurry, Tammy urged. The boys are waiting!
The girls converged on me, and any screams I made were cut off as the wind rune spells wove themselves around the room, preventing anyone outside from hearing me. I remembered a tangle of arms and faces, felt myself being physically disrobed, and forced to lie on the floor while the Asha began to dress me in Lady Shadi's Hua.
Let's see how she looks!
I was tugged back into a sitting position, my head spinning. Zoya assessed me carefully.
I suppose she will do nicely, given such short notice to prepare. Place the sitar on her lap, Brigitte.
The girl with the braids complied. Zoya pursed her lips.
Something's missing.
She reached down and plucked the crescent amethyst clasp from my hair.
Sveta, lend me your opal pin.
A yellow-haired Asha lifted her hand up to her hair in horror.
Why take mine? Take one of Tammy's. She's got more than any of us here.
Hand it over, Sveta.
Grumbling, Sveta took the exquisite purple-jeweled pin from her hair and tossed it at the other girl. Zoya gathered up one side of my hair and pushed the pin through it. I winced when the sharp point jabbed at my scalp.
There you go. She looks rather like an impoverished Asha with only 2 zivars to her name.
She poked at my crescent pin with disdain.
But with this, she can pass as one of us. If barely.
We're giving you a promotion, little Tia.
Imagine. From lowly maid to full-fledged Asha in the space of an hour.
The others found this especially funny.
What do you want?
Now that I was sure they had no real intentions of harming me, I was growing angrier by the second despite the strange buzzing in my head.
Why are you doing this to me?
Consider this a small life lesson. Your Lady Shadi took the role I wanted in the Darashi Oyun, and I've been meaning to find some way to return the favor.
She smiled at me.
I didn't ask you to come here, little girl.
But you played the truant. So you're in trouble anyway,
regardless of what you do.
You'd best play along to make things easier on your house. You're wearing Lady Shadi's Hua.
And you have her sitar.
I'm sure you know what that means.
I froze. She was right. I may not be an Asha yet, but Lady Shadi and I were members of House Valerian. Everything I did in her clothes would be done in her name, on Mistress Parmina and Lady Michaela's names, and on the Valerian's name. And it did not matter one whit that I had been forced into it.
I have to go! I burst out, struggling, but more hands held me in place.
My headache refused to go away, and I wasn't even sure I could stand on my own even if I wanted to.
And how can I let you leave?
The pretty Asha said.
After you've stolen my good friend Shadi's Hua and her favorite instrument. I ought to alert the mistress of the Falling Leaf and have you thrown out in full view of all the other paying guests.
I knew what she was telling me. If I tried to leave, she would make sure that the Valerian's reputation would suffer. And while I didn't care about how Mistress Parmina would react, the last thing I wanted to do was disappoint Lady Michaela.
That's better.
Zoya grinned when I relaxed.
Don't worry. Keep a smile on your face and do everything I instruct you to, and you'll be free to leave once the party is over.
The party?
But the other girls were already forcing me to my feet, and I was still too dazed to put up much of a struggle. They led me across the garden to another room, where the murmur of voices within told me that guests were already in attendance. Grinning, the braided Asha named Brigitte drew the door open, and I found myself staring into the eyes of Prince Kantz.
Have you ever been in love? The Asha asked. She was up before dawn. I found her by the grave again, looking up at the